Good afternoon, all of you. Welcome in Antwerpen. My name is Diederik Rots. I work for UTU Consult, a small but great company specialized in building the largest type of applications, and that includes Windows 8 apps. I'm also on Twitter from time to time. I run a rather successful blog on XAML technology, and these days that's mainly Windows 8 store apps, and so on. Today I wanted to talk to you about something that not all of us do every day: building custom controls in XAML environments. Okay, focus of the talk will be building controls in XAML and C Sharp. I'm first going to try to convince you that it's necessary in most of the applications by showing you what we have in the toolbox in Visual Studio and compare that to what our customers expect to have in their applications. And there's actually a big gap between those two. And then I'm going to show you how you can fill that gap by rolling your own controls. And fortunately for us, as a developer, there are many possible choices over here. You can build custom controls from scratch. You can drag and drop a group of controls together onto a panel and reuse that in many places of your app, or even in many apps. That's called a user control or a composite control. You can also say, hey, I like that control over there, but I want to give it some extra behavior. I like the text box control as such, but I want to add validation to it, or auto-completion. I like the combo box, but I want it to automatically sort its items, and so on. So you pick an existing control and you derive a control class from it, and in that class you give extra properties, extra behaviors, and so on to an existing control. And you can do something similar by abstracting that specific behavior that you want in a separate class and hook that behavior to an existing control. And then you also have a new type of control without creating actually a new control class. But first, let me try to convince you that building custom controls, although, as I already said, it's not something that we do for each and every application, is in most of the larger applications definitely a necessity. On the left part of this slide, you actually see what developers see in their toolbox. Some high-level panels combined with some very low-level controls. Button, rectangle, radio button, ellipse, tooltip. Not controls that you can do a lot with in an application. While on the right hand side you see what most of our customers expect in an application: charts, diagrams, pie charts, Gantt charts, maps, and so on. And okay, in most cases what we do is we buy a third-party library, but I will show you that it's also possible to roll most of these controls yourself. It's also fun, by the way. So let me try to explain you how you can build your own controls. I already mentioned that there are different types of controls, and this is the order in which I'm going to navigate through them. The most important one will be the custom control, okay? Once you know how to build and design a custom control, you can get away very easily with the other types of controls. I also tried to find a definition of each of the type of controls. Well, a custom control is a control that comes with a generic .xaml file. Those of you who did already some WPF and Silverlight development know what a generic XAML file is. It is a file that contains the default style, the default look and feel of a control. Well, a custom control is a control that comes with one of those files. Is the files is the file that you actually dropped to the people in the room next door here. It's the file that you give to the designers. It's the file that contains the look and feel of the control. A very powerful characteristic of a custom control, well, is the fact that you can definitely style and template it. It is the user that uses your control in his or her application that for 200% can define how that control will look and feel, which is very nice. We also start calling it a custom control if it's useful enough and interesting enough to be reused in more than one application. And for that, we usually create custom controls in their own assembly, so we can use it in more than one application. This is actually a definition that I got from Tim Hewer, the head of the XAML department from Microsoft. Let me show you, for starters, how to create a custom control from scratch. Well, there's really nothing to it. It can even be done in the free version of Visual Studio, the Visual Studio Express, of which I'm starting an instance right now. I just create a new project, Windows Store project, blank application on my desktop. I'm not going to add it to source control this time. Wait a couple of seconds, and hop, we have an application. If you right-click here and say add a new item of the type templated control, okay, and you say add, then Visual Studio will do all the rest. I have a Teams folder that was added by the project template that contains a generic .xaml. And Visual Studio also added a custom control C# class with a new class that inherits from control. And in the constructor, it gets its default style key assigned. In the C# part of the control, you write the state, the behavior, the methods, the events, etc. While in the generic XAML part, in the style, you define the look and feel of that control. So here, in the generic XAML, there is most probably an entry. A new style was created. Style target type equals my new custom control. And there is a couple of startup lines of XAML. It's just a border, and that's it. And now we can start over here adding the look and feel in a very developer-friendly environment, in a sense that there is IntelliSense and code completion, and that's basically it. Set of property equals, okay, background, value equals red, and stuff like that. And over here you can start XAMLing together the look and feel of your control. There is no graphical designer, okay, so you have to think upfront, or just throw that file to a designer. He will open it in Blend, and there he has much better support for all of this. So you see, starting everything is not that hard. The next thing you should do is decorate your class and your XAML file with the necessary aspects. For example, the state. Your control will have some properties. The control that I'm going to build from scratch in a couple of minutes is a very simplified version of the slide of control. Well, the slider has a couple of properties. A slider actually represents a value within a range. And a range has a minimum and a maximum. So if you want to build a slider control, you give it three properties: minimum, maximum, and value. That's it. Now, regular properties are regular CLR properties are not good enough, okay? Because you want to do some binding against the properties of those controls, preferably in XAML. That means that you have to define these properties as so-called dependency properties. You also are going to give that control some behavior, some methods, some events, and so on. And that's the most important part. In all the XAML platforms, since the beginning, the definition of a control is actually its state and its behavior. All the rest can be solved by styling and templating in XAML. The definition, for example, of a button in XAML is a control on which it makes sense to click once. That's it. We don't care in that definition how it looks like. Because you can make it look like whatever you want. You only have to be able to click on it. So, okay, dependency properties and methods and events are what you focus on. All the rest can be done later. Okay, in my slider, I'm going to move a thumb control to the left and to the right. That means that in my code, I will manipulate a thumb and a rectangle. That means that a thumb and a rectangle with an expected name should also be in that style definition. And that's what the template parts are about. We will see that in detail later on. My control will also be in a couple of states: enabled, disabled, ported, landscape, filled, snapped, focused, unfocused, and things like that. And based on those states, its visual appearance will be modified. Well, there's the Visual State Manager that will handle all of those transformations. So these are the things that you should consider if you design and build a new custom control. Let's start with the easy part, the dependency properties. As I already mentioned, we're going to build a slider control from scratch, and it should have a minimum, a maximum, and a value. Since I'm interested in data binding, I'm going to define these three as a dependency property. I also want, if programmatically I change the value of the slider, I want the slider to upgrade. I want the slider to redraw itself. That means that if the value is changed, my class will recalculate the position of the rectangle and the thumb. So I need that onValueChanged method over here. Let's take a look at those dependency properties in the app that contains the slider. I have here an application with a custom control, a user control, a library in a separate DLL, and a main application. And there should be a slider somewhere. Up here is the definition of my slider. It inherits from control. It comes with a generic XAML in the themes folder. We're going to take a look at that in a couple of minutes. But you see that the slider has some properties. Maybe that is too small to read, but there is anyway a minimum property, a maximum property, a value property of a specific type. I decided that double is a good data type to store those values. I can also provide initial values for all of them. So by default, the slider goes from 0 to 100 and it starts up with the value 100. And when through binding or programmatically a value is set or changed, then I'm going to call the onValueChanged method. And here you have the typical getters and setters that you have for dependency properties. Dependency properties, okay, are generated with actually a lot of code. That's a lot of code to write a simple property. Fortunately, okay, there are code snippets for that. If I go here to the other empty project, if I type prop dp, tap tap, okay, the code snippet gets expanded and I have all that horrible code that is generated for me. All I have to do is fill out, okay, those yellow boxes. So it's nothing to be afraid of. That's dependency properties. Second aspect that is important in designing and developing a custom control, well, is the look and feel. I tried to define the simplest slider possible. Okay, if you compare this to the style of the wheel slider that comes with the framework, okay, you're going to be surprised, because the slider is actually, the wheel slider is actually a very complex control. Anyway, the slider that I built for you is defined by a rectangular border. In that border, there is a thumb control, and a thumb control is a primitive control. It's actually a rectangle that you can drag around. Okay, and that's very nice inside the slider. And it's a control that is used inside a lot of other controls, like scroll bars, and so on. So I have a thumb that I can move to the left and the right, and when that thumb moves, the value is updated. And vice versa, when the value of the slider is updated, I'm going to move the thumb. And to the left side of that thumb, I'm going to actually create a filled rectangle that represents, okay, the bar that shows the value. That's the by far the simplest slider that I could dream of. So these are the things that you will see in the generic.xaml file. A border, a thumb, a rectangle. What you can also see in that generic XAML file is that I give the visual state manager. Some states to manage based on whether or not my control is disabled. I'm going to apply some color schemes. Okay. Typically, when a control is disabled, it is filled with 50 shades of gray, yeah? And the thumb cannot be moved, and stuff like that. Those are all things that you define inside the styles.xaml. Of course, my C# file is going to tell the control, hey, you are disabled, and hey, you are enabled, and hey, I am now moving the rectangle, the thumb around, and I change the size of the rectangle. So in my style definition, there are a couple of things that the developer needs. And the developer will identify those parts by template parts and visual state parts. He will decorate the C# class with some attributes, as you will see. Anyway, you see in the style there will be a rectangle and a thumb. Let's take a look at it. And then, by modifying the style, you can make that control look like you want it to look like, which is fantastic. This is a very old blog item over there from, well, the early days of WPF that explains how templating works in the XAML platform. This, ladies and gentlemen, is twice the same list box. On the C# side and in the page, this is exactly the same list box. It's the list of, well, sun and then the planets up until Pluto. The only difference is that the style file of the control on the right side was given to a designer, and he or she made it look like that. This is exactly the same control. Only the style is different. You can select, it has tooltips and things like that. Oh, this is amazing. Let's take a look at how that appears in our application. I have, as I mentioned, somewhere a slider style here in the generic XAML. Here it is. A grid, okay, with a border. And in that border, a canvas. And a rectangle, and a thumb. That's it. That's the XAML of the control. I've given those rectangles and thumb elements a name, because I want to manipulate those in the corresponding C# code. And in the bottom here, I have the Visual State Manager showing the different states in which the control can be, and how the control should look like if it's moved to one of those states. Okay, in the normal case, there's nothing wrong. I'm going to show the thumb part as light steel blue, and the rectangle part will be filled with slate blue. But if the control is disabled, I'm going to use light gray for the thumb and dim gray for the rectangle on the left. That's it. If we take a look at the corresponding C# file, then you will see that in the onValue changed, for example, let's jump to that definition. If the value changed, I'm going to ask the control to update its controls. What's it going to do? It's going to do some calculations. And at the end of those calculations, it will move the thumb. And it will change the width of the rectangle. Oh, that's dangerous. That means that there has to be a thumb and a rectangle in the corresponding style. The designer can define how the control should look and feel when the app is running, but he or she has to make sure that there is a rectangle and there is a thumb, because I need those in my code. And to warn the designer that there are some expectations about the style, the developer has actually decorated the class with this attribute, template part, on top of the class definition. He said, okay, I am a control, I have some properties, but I expect in my style a thumb and a rectangle. And they should be called part thumb and part rectangle. That's it. You also see that when the isEnable changed property, where is that, is changed, over here, I'm going to change the state of my control. If I'm enabled, I go to normal. If I'm disabled, I tell the Visual State Manager to go to the disabled state. That means that in the corresponding style definition, there has to be a notion of those styles. And again, exactly the same way, the developer tells the designer, hey, you can do whatever you want regarding look and feel, but I'm going to tell the control to go to this and this and this state. So you have to make sure that in your style definition, there is a notion of that state. Yeah, by the way, let's take a look at how this looks like in the app. On top, you have the native slider. Okay, very nice. In the bottom you have the custom slider that you just saw the C-sharp and the XAML part of. Okay, this is the slider that I would put in the Boomba app. The slider on top is much too narrow for little children, so this is a nice big slider. Here we go. Let's add something in the main page. Over here, I have somewhere a toggle switch. Oh, let's stop the app. There we go. You already see it on top over there in the Visual Studio Designer. I have a small toggle switch that allows me to enable and disable that control. So you can see what the impact is of that Visual State Manager. There we go. My slider is enabled. When I flip that toggle switch, you see 50 shades of gray, and it doesn't respond anymore to my input. Why? Because the Visual State Manager also sent that disable message to the underlying control, and the thumb, for example, knows how to respond on that. It knows that it shouldn't move anymore. If I enable again, oops, there it is. The control is nicely blue again, and so on. Let's see what we can do on the styling part. Let's create another instance of my custom slider and give it another style. Okay, I made my life relatively easy by putting all the code in there. All I have to do is uncomment it. Ooh, that's a lot. Hoppa. Literally. Okay, this is just the title, text block, blah, blah, blah. Here is my slider, the CC slider. And what I just did is give it another template. It's again a border with a height of 80. A brand new control. It's a dashed line, actually. So I can add extra elements inside that control. I should have a rectangle with a specific name. Part rectangle, it's there, no problem. I should have a thumb. And I gave that thumb another template. Instead of the just rectangle, I'm just placing an image. I'm replacing the thumb by an image. But on the outside, it's still a thumb. And it still has the expected name that is used in the corresponding C-sharp code. Okay, if we now run this code, I could have put that style in another file, of course, and this is where it actually should belong. But this is actually twice the same control. The two at the bottom are two instances of the same CC slider control. Okay, one of them looks like a pumped up regular slider, the other one looks like Pac-Man. So as long as the designer respects the contract that the developer has placed as attributes on top of his C-sharp file, he can do whatever he likes with the look and feel of that control. That's very nice. What you also can do is give the control some extra methods and some extra events. I didn't find any useful extra methods to give to a slider, so I didn't add any methods, but I added an event. I want my slider to raise an event when it hits the border, when it hits the minimum value or it hits the maximum value. And then the page or the control on which the slider lives can then react to that event by playing a sound or something like that. So I actually created in the slider class an event bound hit. And that event is raised by a method called onBoundHit. Let's take a look at that. In my C-sharp class, here in the slider, yeah, I should go to the C-sharp and not in the XAML. There is somewhere a boundHit event handler declared. And in the calculation, when the control is being redrawn, where are we? Okay, this is the event raiser. In the calculation, when we reach the zero level, I'm going to raise the event on bound hit. That should be minimum, by the way, instead of zero. Ooh. Nice. When you reach the maximum, I'm also going to just raise that event. And it's up to the surrounding page or control to react to that event. If you go to the main page code, not the XAML this time. Oh, it is in the XAML actually, in the XAML of the main page. There is a registration to that event. Okay, if the slider hits one of the boundaries, minimum or maximum, execute the code over here and it actually displays an element that is hidden by default, and with the timer I hide it again. This is how everything looks like in the application. Okay, I'm moving the slider, and when I hit the bound, pats! Opa! Very nice. Okay, this one cannot do that. Up, there we go. See, there's nothing magic involved. I should have used an animation for that instead of a timer, but so there you are. We built a complete custom control from scratch. It has a look and feel that is completely stylable and templatable. It has some behaviors, it has properties. You can do some binding against those properties, and so on. Very nice. Well, that's all you need to know about building custom controls. No matter what custom control that you can dream of, it has the same parts, including controls that may look a little bit more complex, like a radial gauge. A couple of months ago, I created a radial gauge. Well, I actually migrated a radial gauge that existed in Silverlight to Windows 8 with the version of that time of the .NET framework and Visual Studio that was a real pain, but I can assure you that if you already built some custom controls in WPF or in Silverlight, exactly the same principles apply, the same techniques, the same code to WinRT controls, which is fantastic, actually. Okay, the radial gauge control may look complex, but okay, if you think of it, it's a radial gauge control, it's very simple. It has some labels, it has some ticks, it maybe has some scales, but all of those are static. The only thing that is special about a radial gauge control is actually the fact that the needle moves. That's it. For the rest, okay, it's actually, it could just as well be yet another slider. Actually, it represents a value within a range. And it shouldn't be a surprise that if you take a look at the UML diagram of this radial gauge custom control, that you see the same properties. There's a minimum, there's a maximum, there's a range. Okay, I have added some scales on it and some extra property to, for example, change the color of the labels and so on. But for the rest, even if you dive into the code, you will see that there's nothing special about it. Once you know dependency properties, visual state manager, and template parts, it becomes very easy. So this is the radial gauge control, the C-sharp part. Okay, it has a minimum, it has a maximum, it has a value, and so on. When the value is changed, over here, instead of moving the thumb and updating the width of the rectangle, I change the rotation angle of the needle. But for the rest, okay, this is just nothing more or less than a fancy slider. Again, also on top of the definition, you see, I'm telling to the designer, hey designer, you may make that control look and feel how you want. I just want a path in there, and it needs to be called part needle, because that's the thing that I'm rotating from my code behind file. If you take a look at the generic XAML part, it's okay, it's a lot more complex. Okay, it also uses some converters and so on. But basically it is a grid with, okay, an items control for different scales, some ellipses, major ticks and minor ticks, you will see what that means. Labels on the outside of the control, these are the scales. I also have an extra text block that shows the unit measure. And here is the definition of the needle. Okay, there needs to be a path with the name part needle. And that's all. Oh, and the needle also has a cover. Nice. How does that look like in the app? Well, let's move to page 2. Here it is. Okay. This is a radial gauge control. Okay, it has some scales, it has a needle, it has marks with two sizes, and it has some labels on the outside. And I have bound the value of the slider underneath it to the value of the radial gauge. And there we are. If after the session, okay, you download the code and you dive into it, you'll see that there is nothing magical in there. There's really no need to buy these types of controls. If you want to build a Gantt chart, if you want to build an interactive 3D diagram and things like that, okay, then it makes sense not to build that yourself from scratch. Okay. A couple of months ago, I actually migrated an existing Silverlight radial gauge control. When I built the simple slider example, I also built it in WPF. There are some differences, okay? If you come from WPF, definitely, there's a lot of, even between Silverlight and WPF, there's a lot of difference. But okay, if you are used to building controls on the other XAML-based platforms, then there are a couple of things that you have to say goodbye to if you move to WinRT. A couple of brushes, for example, don't exist. There's no radial gradient brush. There's no tile brush. There is no image brush dot tile mode. Yeah, okay, because there is no tile brush. There's also no visual brush. So that repeating dot pattern, actually, which is a image brush dot tile mode in WPF, cannot be built in Silverlight. That's why I had to mimic it with a dashed line. Actually, those brushes, just make your application not look like a standard Windows Store app. So I really don't miss this type of brushes. The binding mechanism is also less powerful in WinRT than it is in WPF and even in Silverlight. There's no multi-binding. Okay. There's no binding.string format, which is horrible, actually. They should fix that. You can throw in your own converters to do that, but that's a little bit overkill. There's no binding relative source ancestor element. I can also live with that. With each iteration of the WinRT framework, this list actually gets smaller and smaller. It started actually with a very long list, where element bindings didn't work in the beginning and things like that. The generic XAML was not recognized and stuff like that. But in the current state of Windows 8, we're actually pretty close to Silverlight, which is more than enough, more than good enough to build your own controls. There are other types of controls that you can build. Second major type of controls are the user controls. These are actually the easiest to build because you have help from the Visual Studio designers. While you are drawing a user control, you can see what you're actually defining, which is not the case with the styler. Well, a user control is, or a composite control, is a control that encapsulates a group of existing controls and provides its own logic. It's actually a panel on which you drag and drop a couple of controls that belong together, like a text box that is always prefixed by a text block and things like that. Okay, how do you build that? Let's jump to the Visual Studio Express again and say add new item, and I should have somewhere here user control. And then you see that after a while I immediately end up in a XAML file with a code behind. And over here I can take my toolbox and drag and drop some stuff. And I have, with a little luck, I have design from, support from the Visual Studio designers, which is very nice. As an example, I want to show you the, by lack of a better name, the enhanced slider that I built a couple of weeks ago. It's a group of controls with in the middle a slider, but some extra labels that show the minimum value on the left, the maximum value on the right, the unit measure, and so on. And it also comes with an extra button. If I click on that button, I can provide via my keyboard directly a value. Because, okay, the slider is very nice, but it's also very unprecise. Okay, if you have a high range and you want to exactly specify a specific value, then the slider is very user unfriendly. Specifically, okay, if you go to snapped mode, for example, or to portrait mode, and your slider is suddenly only 1 centimeter wide, then it makes sense to manually enter the value. That's a typical scenario for a user control, a group of controls that belongs together, and that you can give, again, some extra dependency properties, visual states, and so on. I have created that, since I am reusing that control in a number of apps, I again packed it inside a separate DLL. And okay, there is, by the way, in the current version, it will be solved by the next service pack. In the current version of the framework, there is a bug. If you have user controls in a separate DLL, the assembly name may not contain dots. So that's why that stuff is called U2U consult underscore user controls. If there are dots in the name, then Visual Studio says, oh, there is an example problem. But anyway, over here again, I have a user control with a XAML file, and okay, he's loading the designer. So the only thing that he shows is actually the outer grid. I don't see the controls, but okay. So anyway, I have a slider in the middle. I have a text box with minimum value, a text box with maximum value, a button for direct keyboard access, and a text block with the header. And again, dependency properties and so on. And some events. It's not my intention to dive too deeply in the code, but you just have to know how that thing looks like. It's the control on top of the list over there. So the YouTube, the 72 million views, the 0, the 100, and the slider in the middle together are the user control. And I can nicely manipulate, and you see there the value being updated. But I can also press the button over here, and when I press that button, the label 17 will transform into a text box. Well, it's actually always a text box. I just visually make it look like a label. So if I press that button, okay, I can now directly access it and says, okay, 99. When I press enter, hopla. Very nice, very convenient. I used it in a couple of applications, and users are very happy with that. Still a couple of controls to show. Oh, this slide explains why creating a user control is actually so simple. It's what we do every day. Every time that we create a new XAML page in a Windows Store App project, an instance of page is created, but page is a user control. So that designer support and so on, we're used to that. So it's the most developer-friendly control. It's not the most powerful one. Custom control is the most powerful one. But this is the most developer-friendly one. What you can also do is creating derived controls, inherited controls, which means that, okay, you create a base class that inherits from an existing control, other than control or user control, of course. An example that I just want to show you is the dynamic text block that, if I'm not wrong, comes from the Callisto framework from Tim Heuer. That framework also contains a control that I've written, by the way. Anyway, the dynamic text block is a text block that does trimming at character level. When the text that you want to show in a text box is too long, he shrinks the text until it fits the text block, and then it adds 3 dots, which is very nice. That control was created as a subclass of content control. It has a text property as a dependency property, and a non-text change, of course. When the text is changed, then the control is remeasured. The text is shrunk until it fits the text box. Let's take a look at it. Oh, that was not what I meant to do. Let's not dive too deep into the code. The code will be available. So here is the dynamic text block. It's just a regular C# class that inherits from content control. It has a couple of dependency properties, like any control. And it uses some stuff that it inherited, like, for example, this. It creates a new text block and uses that as content. Content is a property that is inherited from the base class, content control. How does that control look in practice? It's the second one over there, the inherited control. I have some text over there. And okay, the text is a lot longer than what the text block can show, but you will just cut off letters from the string that it shows until it fits, and then adds 3 dots. I know the text block control from the WinRT framework has a trimming option, but that is word trimming only. This one does trimming at character level. Okay. Okay, the text over there is Korean, all the words are very short. So it doesn't matter whether you trim on word or on character level. But on the other hand, if that would be a language that typically uses very long words, like German, okay, if that would have been Fingerspitzengefühl, Reinheitsgebot, for example, you will see nothing. Trimming at character level is a lot more user-friendly in that case. So there is definitely a place in a lot of applications to use this control. Now what we did until now is each time that we wanted a new control, we created a new subclass. What you can also do is, instead of each time creating another subclass, extend existing controls with functionality that you put in a separate class. A little bit like extension methods in a regular .NET. So an extended control is a control of which the behavior is extended, but without creating a subclass of control. The best way, well, basically the only way to do that is by working with attached properties, which are a special kind of dependency properties. And fortunately, again, there is a code snippet, prop A in that case, to generate attached properties. And although natively it is not supported by WinRT, you can attach behaviors to controls if you download an extra library. The example that I want to show you is a text box that is extended with validation. The native text blocks in the Visual Studio Toolbox don't support validation. So if you want to create a text box that only accepts numeric values, for example, you have to brew one yourself. Fortunately, you can do that without creating new control. You can just abstract that those properties, that behavior, in a separate class, and then hook them to existing framework elements. You do that with attached properties. Examples that we all know are, for example, grid.row, canvas.left, and things like that. You can give in your XAML those properties to whatever ellipse, image, grid view, semantic view that you encounter. The semantic view and the grid view and the ellipse don't have a grid row property. It is the grid that has a row property, but you can hook that to whatever control that you want. What I actually want to show you is a control that comes out of the WinRT XAML toolkit, in which I also have a couple of lines of code. It is the textbox validation extensions. It contains a couple of properties, again, attached properties. The format, numeric, small caps, large caps, Chinese, whatever. And it contains two brushes. How the control should look like when he's happy and how the control should look like when he's not happy. Okay? I don't have the time to dive into the code, but I definitely want to show you the result. What I have over here is the validation text box. It's this one over here, which is extended via attached properties. There is no validating text box class in the solution. There is the notion of validation that I apply to an existing text box. And I actually told him, please accept only numeric values. And now he's angry. Okay, that's why he is in red. If I select this one and start typing, okay, I am typing alphabetic characters. He's still not happy. From the moment that I type numeric values like this, hopla, he's white. These are the types of controls that business users are really waiting for. And you see it's not too difficult to build those. What we, by the way, typically do with attached properties is use them to register and unregister event handlers. And then we're actually pretty close to what was originally brought into Silverlight a couple of years ago, namely behaviors. Also, that exists in WinRT, but you have again to download an extra toolkit. Here, at the bottom, that control over here, I have given him an extra behavior. I think that in my application, each time that the user selects that control, he wants to override the whole content instead of appending to it. And for that, I told to that control, please, if you are focused, I immediately want you to select your whole text so that it can be immediately replaced. And I did not do that by creating an extra control. I did that by creating the select all on focus behavior and hooked that in the XAML to an existing control. And indeed, as I use the tab, we are already there. If I use the tab key, I'm now in the extended control over here. You see the cursor is at the end. If I tap to that last control, hopla, it selects immediately its whole text. How is that done? Well, just a brief dive into the XAML, not in the C#. In my main page, over here, I should have at the bottom, it's a single page application, okay? Very easy, very straightforward. Everything is in one XAML file. This is the validating text box. Okay, it's a regular text box. I just told him, well, okay, please validate Be angry if you are empty or not numeric, and if you are angry, show yourself with a salmon background. That's it. And for the attached behavior, something similar. In the XAML, it's a regular text box, no custom control, no user control, nothing special. I just tell him, please, if you get the focus, select all your text. It's very nice, very easy. There's still one thing that I have to uncomment. Those of you who know, who read my blog from time to time, they know that I always have aliens on the right. Well, Doctor Who characters, Star Trek characters, Star Wars characters, Battlestar Galactica characters. Well, I'm running out of aliens, so I need to come up with something else. Takes a while, apparently. And there we go. Ready for the next blog item. Small wrap up. I hope that I convinced you that building controls for Windows Store apps is necessary for most applications. I showed you that there are more than enough types and alternatives. And I hope that I have also proven to you that is definitely nothing to be afraid of. Thank you very much.